Hey everybody, this is PJ Riley from Lancaster Archery. Welcome to another episode of the Lancaster Archery Podcast. We got a special one for you today. I am here with Dave Mitchell, the Land Management Supervisor for the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and Lauren Fenstermacher. She is the manager of Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. This is in Lancaster, Lebanon County, Southeast PA. Folks, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
So, Middle Creek. First, we should introduce what Middle Creek is. So, one of you could tell me, what is Middle Creek?
Sure. So, Middle Creek is an area that's run and operated by the Pennsylvania Game Commission. It is considered state game lands 46. And the area that we hold our controlled hunts in is called the Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. So it's kind of separate from the forested game lands. A little bit of background about Middle Creek is that it was purchased through what's called Project 70 and then also Project 500. So those monies from those projects were used to purchase this land from landowners. Unfortunately, some of them were pushed out through eminent domain, but it turned into an area that hunters, birders, recreationists can use, and it's an area that people really like to come to and enjoy for multiple different reasons.
And I believe that was in the 60s?
Yeah, the 70s, yep.
And how big of an area are we talking about?
The entire game lands, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, is including the forested area, is over 6,000 acres.
6,000.
Yep. And we were just talking about the main lake that encompasses Middle Creek. So more background about the area here. There's a main lake that was actually created, including a dam, mostly for Canada geese and Canada geese hunting opportunities. It did turn into, like I said, more than that later on. But Middle Creek was founded at a time when Canada geese numbers, if you can believe this, weren't very populated in the state. So this was an area that people could come to and hunt waterfowl instead of venturing all the way out to the other side of the state to Erie and Pymatuning, Presque Isle State Park. People from Philadelphia and the suburbs could come here to hunt instead of going all the way out there.
And the premise is that there are areas of the Middle Creek property where people generally don't go. It's set aside just for animals, mainly waterfowl. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yes, the controlled area is where we hold our goose hunts. So I believe we have 20 goose blinds out there, and we have a regulated hunt. We hunt it 3 times a week through the goose season, and you can apply through a lottery drawing to get picked for that. And that's different. Because of that, we don't allow any other access in there. When we received condemnation authority to put in Middle Creek, one of the things that we were required to do was to provide other forms of public recreation. So we're sitting here today in the Middle Creek Visitor Center, which is essentially a museum. It gets used by the public, school groups. We have a tour road that goes through the controlled area that's open generally in the spring, summer, and early fall. We also have picnic areas. So it's totally set up differently than a game lands.
Right.
But hunting is still a major part of what we do here. And like Lauren said, goose hunting is at the heart of it. But anytime that you have an area that you restrict people, it becomes an oasis for wildlife.
Yes.
And we have Canada geese here, but we have a whole host of grassland species. It's an important bird area, really, really popular with bird watchers. And we also have a really healthy white-tailed deer population as well.
Which is what brings us here from Lancaster Archery to talk about some bow hunting. Last year, Lauren, you've always had some deer hunting here.
Right.
Muzzleloader, I guess it's muzzleloader and archery. That's usually what you did in the late season. But last year, Lauren, you started a new opportunity here targeting specifically bow hunters. Tell us about that. What's this new opportunity?
Sure. And just briefly on the muzzleloader and the flintlock muzzleloader archery hunt, there was two hunts here that were held previously, one in December, one in January. The December hunt is usually fairly well received and pretty popular, and they harvest a good amount of deer at that hunt. However, you were talking about the different areas here at Middle Creek. They mentioned the controlled area where we do a lot of our waterfowl hunting. The muzzleloader hunts were targeted at what we call propagation area. Those are areas that are not usually allowed hunting at all, so our goose hunters are not permitted in there, and the public is not permitted in there either. And even PGC staff with the Game Commission staff tries to limit the amount of time that we spend in those areas. The muzzleloader hunts were in those propagation areas. The second hunt of those muzzleloader hunts that was held in January was the results were usually really poor. A few deer, is usually bitterly cold. People really didn't show up as much as they did for the first hunt. So we decided to take that opportunity and turn it into a longer hunt in the fall during the archery season and try to reach a different group of hunters than just the flintlock muzzleloader hunters. And that, just to give you a percentage of the amount of people that use bows during those hunts, we had one person use a crossbow last year, and he did harvest the deer, but not very many people use bows during those hunts. So we started, and I will give Dave some of this credit here too, but his idea, and combined with some of the ideas that I had, we tried to create a hunt in the fall archery season that we could get a decent amount of hunters through, but still make it a quality hunt experience for them at a different time of year. Middle Creek is sort of to some people, they don't, you know, it's sort of like a hands-off place. So to allow people to come in and hunt this area was a big deal for the public.
Absolutely. And as we were talking about, Dave, as you mentioned, this is Pennsylvania Game Lands, but this is not like hunting Pennsylvania Game Lands. These are unpressured deer. Some of them get to be old and very big.
Yes, there are. There's a very good adult age class here for bucks. Generally, there's several deer around. You know, they may be 140, 150 inches, 4 or 5 year old buck, and that's a draw to people. They like to come and watch them from from the various public roads. You can see deer out 2 hours before dark. You know, exhibiting rutting behavior that you'd see, you know, on the outdoor channel and things like that. So giving people the opportunity to go into the control area and experience that. You know, when you look at Pennsylvania as a whole, we have a lot of hunting pressure, especially here in Lancaster and Lebanon County. We have a lot of hunters, small woodlots, not a lot of great, large tracts of public land. So by doing a drawing and allowing people, even if it's only a week or two, to experience that unpressured quality experience, I thought that would be something that they would enjoy, and it's available to everybody. You don't have to have a lease, or you don't have to be able to afford going out to Ohio or Illinois. You can do it right here in our own backyard.
Sure. And so the requirement, before we get into the specifics, the requirements to apply for this are what?
You need to have your regular Pennsylvania hunting license, but you also need to have your, we're located in WMU, or Wildlife Management Unit 5B, so you will need to have a doe or antlerless license for WMU 5B as well in order to apply.
And that's it.
That's it.
No cost, free. Anybody who meets those requirements can apply for this opportunity.
Assuming that you can purchase a regular hunting license, yep.
So the hunt itself, how does that work? I get picked. What happens?
Sure. So I'll just give you a brief background about what happened last year. We had 892 applicants apply. 48 of those applicants were selected to hunt through a random drawing that we have here at the visitor center, and that's usually held a month or so beforehand on a Wednesday at 10 o'clock, and we actually had a really good turnout for that, even though it was during the week.
I think we had close to 50 people show up
to see if their name was pulled out of a bin, but we'll do a random drawing such as that, but before you get to that point, you need to go to the post office, you need to get a standard postcard, and on that postcard you need to put your name, CID number, address and contact information, and your 5B tag number as well, and you'll send it into Middle Creek. And all this information is also going to be posted on our website under the, if you search Middle Creek under the search tab, this will be posted there. And last year, the news release that we sent for this went out July 21st. So we're looking to do it a little bit sooner this year, mid-July. But once, if your name is selected out of that barrel for the hunt, from that point forward, you will be getting a packet in the mail from us. And in that packet, it will include things such as a parking pass that you need to have on the dash of your vehicle while you're hunting. It also will include all the rules and regulations, the permit that you will need to have on your person while you are actually hunting. And then it'll have times, which are also included in the news release. We have two open what would you call them, open houses, not open houses, but discussions where people need to come in.
It's almost like a training session where we go over the rules and regulations. It's almost like a super mini little like bow hunter education course. We talk a little bit about bow hunter ethics. We talk about shot placement, tree stand safety, just those couple of highlights that we want to make sure that we can reiterate to everybody. And because like Lauren said, this is a very public area. And we want to make sure that bow hunters are being perceived in a positive light.
Right, so we
want to make sure that we're taking, you know, shots within their effective range. We want to make sure that they know what the proper shot angles are, what the proper shot placement would be. I think last year it took maybe 45 minutes.
Yeah, and it was really well received. People really enjoyed the opportunity to get just the background information that they needed. So the other thing that happens at the drawing is when you are selected out of the barrel, you are chosen for a zone, and if you are able to receive a buck tag. So within the controlled area, we have 5 different zones, and each zone has a set number of hunters based on the amount of acres of woods that are located in those zones. So for instance, zone 1 has 291 acres, but 92 acres of woods. So we allow 4 hunters to hunt in there. Out of those 4 hunters, 50% of the hunters are pulled a buck tag as well. So 2 out of the 4 hunters have a buck tag. And then as another example, zone 2, even though it's 234 acres, is only 39 acres of woods. So we only draw 2 hunters. One of those hunters is picked for a buck tag. So that hunter, when they come in, if they have a buck tag, they can harvest either a buck or a doe. And the other hunter is only able to harvest a doe.
And that's these numbers that you're giving for the zones, that's total over the season or that's per week? 4 hunters per week in the one zone?
Right. So there's 4 hunters per, and last year it was 1 week. This year we're changing it to 2 weeks just to account for some weather and some greater opportunities for our archery hunters. But there's 3 different periods that people can come in. And at any given time, there's only 16 hunters total in the 5 different zones that we have. But we have a series of 3 different periods that each period it brings a fresh new group of 16 hunters in. And each one of those groups has 1 scouting day that they can come in beforehand, scout their zone. They can't go into anybody else's zone, but they can hunt wherever they want to in that particular zone that they were drawn. But they can come in beforehand to scout and put their tree stands up, put their blinds up, and then they can, I think it's the next Saturday, their hunt would start.
So that's pretty cool that you get, it's not just a free-for-all. I mean, there will be some other guys in your zone, but it's not like everybody could be in your zone.
Sure. If you get drawn zone 2 or zone 5 is another one of the zones that only has 2 hunters, there's only going to be 1 other person in that zone with you.
That's awesome.
And 46 out of the 48 hunters that were drawn last year hunted, so it was a really good percentage. It's not like people are just applying and then not showing up. In order to hunt, you have to come to those orientation meetings. If you don't come to them, your permit is considered invalid, so you won't be able to hunt.
Gotcha.
And the reason that we broke it down between the antlered and the antlerless, we kicked around a lot of different ideas. We talked about earn a buck, but with such a short period of time to hunt, we didn't want to, we didn't want people maybe extending their effective range or taking shots that they shouldn't take just to get that antlerless deer so they could get their buck tag. We thought about allowing everybody to harvest an antlered deer, but we do want to have some antlerless deer taken. We have a pretty healthy deer herd here, so internally as a staff, we talked it over and we came up with the idea of allowing, 50% of the people to be drawn for buck tags. And I believe that worked out pretty well. We had a pretty even harvest last year.
Yep. 33% of we had, like I said, 46 out of the 48 hunters had shown up to hunt. 15 of those folks were successful in harvesting a deer. And the breakdown, I believe, was 8 doe and 7 buck and then, or antler deer. And then 5 of those antler deer were adult buck and 2 of them were younger deer.
And so that was last year, it was 4 weeks, everybody hunted a week. This year you said it's going to be how many periods and they get 2 weeks?
Sure. Last year was 3 weeks. So there was 3 periods of 16 hunters, same amount of people, just 1 week versus 2 weeks. So what we did at the end of last year was we sent a survey out to all of our hunters that participated in the hunt if they were drawn, and actually sent it to the 2 folks that didn't hunt as well, just so they could answer the questions. And some of the questions on there were, if you had the opportunity to hunt, to draw more hunters with the same amount of time, or would you prefer a longer period of time with the same amount of hunters drawn? So if you said that we would want more hunters, well, your chances of being picked would go up, but you're going to have less time to hunt.
Right.
And as we had discussed previously, it was basically over 80% of the hunters said, no, we want less hunters, but more time.
Right.
So it sounds like they wanted to continue the more quality part of the hunt. And one of the other questions, and Dave talked about this a little bit, the earn a buck factor was also put in those in that survey as well. And again, people seem to agree with what we chose originally. It wasn't quite as high as the previous one, but it seems like the majority of people considered that, you know, they wanted to earn it, or they didn't want to earn a buck. They wanted right. to just get drawn for a buck and then do it that way.
And as you mentioned in the buck breakdown, even though it is different and these deer don't see the pressure that other deer see, they're still, those mature bucks are still mature bucks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They, one of the things that we noticed from talking to some of the guys who spent some time here was, if you're a typical Pennsylvania deer hunter, you head for the thick cover. You go where the deer get pushed to be successful. And because these deer aren't pressured, they're much more daylight active. They spend more time out in the open, more time in fields. And I think it took the guys a little bit of time to adjust to that. They were hunting in the woods and they were watching all the deer out in the open. So, you know, hopefully as we go forward, our hunters are able to adapt to that a little bit, because several people saw some really, really good deer that they did not get the opportunity to harvest. So there should be some really good bucks out there.
And so I wanted to focus on one point you mentioned about deciding who to let hunt bucks, etc., because this isn't just about recreation. This is also a deer management tool for you. This is something that you do to try and control the deer numbers out of there. Obviously, there's not general hunting pressure, so you don't get the same number of deer taken out. Tell me about, to the Game Commission, I mean, you're the Pennsylvania's hunting organization. Tell me about what hunting means to you, your organization, in terms of managing deer numbers.
Well, obviously, hunting is our number one management tool for whitetail deer. We use it statewide. We have deer harvested in the city of Philadelphia. That's an archery hunting only area. And we use it in the suburbs quite extensively. You know, when you look at our management units, especially like 5D, 5C, and 2B, they have some of the highest harvest rates in the state. And those are some of the most populated areas of the state. So we rely on our hunters to do what they can to help us control those deer numbers in those areas. Obviously, by issuing antlerless licenses, we can control the number of deer. And we do all of our management based on a habitat assessment. So if we and we also look at what the people want in those areas as well. So if we have healthy habitat and the people want more deer, we can reduce the harvest a little bit and allow the deer numbers to come up. If we have healthy habitat and the people want that same number of deer, we can keep them there. So it's a very complex thing. It's difficult to sum up our deer management in, you know, a nice quick quick sound bite. But hunting is incredibly important to us on a large scale and also on a smaller scale like this. It's
well, that's what that's one of the things that interested me, because nationally there are states, governments, townships, cities all over that have property and they're trying to figure out how to control deer, and many of them don't look to hunting. They just rule that out right away. Oh, that's not safe. That's not going to be effective. They do things like hire sharpshooters, which cost money, or try and use contraceptives, which there's studies, you know, that say that doesn't work very well. But the Game Commission, you're perfectly comfortable hunting can do the job safely and effectively.
Yes, and I believe that comes straight from the top. You know, our executive office and our board of commissioners, they both believe that hunting should be the first option. And if you look at, we do have deer control permits that do get issued to different municipalities where they do occasionally hire USDA or use sharpshooters. But one of the first things that we ask, one of the first things that we require is, how has regulated hunting, have you used it? If you haven't used it, you must show us that that does not work. And there are some instances where it doesn't work because
sure.
of the way, you know, the population dynamic may be of the way, you know, buildings are situated, and you just really cannot get in there to do the job. But For the most part, even in our populated areas around Philadelphia down in 5D, there's a lot of hunting that occurs down there. Archery hunting, Soberry Township last year went and issued a, they had a special archery hunt on township-owned properties, and also people who owned you know, wooded acreage, they could sign up and they administered it through their township. So Pennsylvania has a really strong heritage of using hunting as a management tool, and I don't see that changing.
So I'm a councilman in someplace in Illinois near Chicago, and we control a park and we got deer running all over the place, and we don't think it's that hunting would be safe in there. What would your response to that be? Let's talk about, I mean, we talked about the effectiveness of the management, but the safety, especially bow hunting.
Right. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can do with archery, as you well know. I've talked to people where they've had programs set up where there were requirements. So you have a park that people are using. So they may post that park that there could be hunting occurring from dawn till 9 a.m. and then from 4 p.m. till dusk. So the hunters would have to be out of the woods and, you know, at 9 o'clock, and they could come back in at 4 o'clock. So that way you can still have that multi-use where you have the people who are there recreating, but you can also have hunters utilizing it. They may be restricted to using tree stands to make sure that no matter how their shots are fired, they're at a downward angle so the arrow will go into the dirt, you know, where you're guaranteed to have that safe backstop. You know, you may require them to take the National Bowhunter Education Foundation archery course. You know, it's like an 8 or 10 hour course that stresses safety and hunting ethics. There's different things that you can do to make sure that the people that are coming in there, because this is not sport hunting. This is, you're in there to do a job. You're in there to solve a problem. And you can do it much cheaper than hiring sharpshooters. So if you're willing to look outside the box, you don't need to just open up the thing and say, go hunt it. You know, you can regulate it. It can be highly regulated, and it can still be effective. And if that doesn't work, then maybe you need to go to the next step. But I think you'd be surprised. You'd have people who, you know, would bend over backwards for the opportunity to go out and help control deer numbers.
Absolutely. Versus spending taxpayer dollars, you have people who would willingly, gladly and willingly do it.
Absolutely, yes.
PJ, if I can just add something to this conversation, that at Middle Creek, as the manager here, I'm responsible, one of the biological biological manager, I'm responsible for managing not only deer, geese, the species that we hunt, but all of the other mammals and birds that are here at Middle Creek. Dave mentioned that we're an important bird area, and we're also an important mammal area. If reptiles and amphibians had distinctions, we would also carry those. This place is very special. The reason I'm bringing this up is when we talked to the archers that when they came in to have these orientation meetings, we stressed to them, this is the first hunt that we're gonna have here. We want it to go smoothly for you, and we wanna continue it. We want it to provide an opportunity for you to help us, but also give the opportunity for you guys to come in here and hunt and have a quality hunting experience. And I can say for everybody that works in Middle Creek, I was pleasantly surprised that how smoothly it went last year. So just nice. Kind of a shout out to the archery hunters that were here. Yeah. They were very professional, and you know, I couldn't have been happier with the way things happened
well,
here.
Well, that raises an interesting point for some people who may think that hunters are just, you know, a bunch of rabble rousers.
Sure. You always like to see the best in groups, and you know, a lot of people say, oh, hunters, you know, they don't care about the welfare of the animals, or they're going to take shots that aren't safe. I was, like I said, pleasantly surprised that the positive outcome that we had from all this, and the archers, I just couldn't have expected anything better. So,
and let's talk a little bit about if someone gets picked here, what they will be hunting. What does the landscape here that they're hunting look like? What do we got? There's some crop fields, woods, you tell me.
So the controlled area is a little bit different than our propagation area. The controlled area has a mixture of grassland areas, wooded areas, as we discussed, based on how many hunters are in each zone. But we also have share farmers that are in each zone. And what you can expect to see there is some corn, soybeans, oats, wheat, standing hay, that kind of thing.
All the stuff deer like to eat.
Sure, yes. So there's a good mixture of everything in each zone, which is why we brought up about them being in the fields. They're out in the fields feeding. So, but it's a good it kind of looks, it reminds you of the rest of Lancaster County to a certain extent, sure. But with the rotational crops and things like that. But they're placed in areas with wooded areas around them and also standing fields with grass that provides a good area for cover, good area to eat, and it's just kind of a perfect situation for a deer.
It actually reminds me of the Midwest, maybe not like West Central Illinois or Southern Iowa where you have more terrain features, but like Eastern Illinois, where you have the creek bottoms and the woodlots with the heavy field component to them.
Right.
Like Lauren talked about there, you know, it's probably a 3-to-1 ratio of open areas to woods, but it's very connected. There's a lot of funnels, there's a lot of fingers, and when you look at it on an aerial photo, it kind of reminds me of some of those areas of the Midwest, and it has the rich soils, it has the good quality soils, and it has deer that can rival those areas out there.
And I guess we should mention all forms of archery. You can hunt here, traditional, compound, crossbow, anything, as long as it's legal.
As long
archery.
As it's, you're legal through our hunting and trapping digest, you
right.
follow those regulations that are listed in there, yep.
What do you think you saw last year in terms of those types? Were there any traditional archers?
We had a large variety of people that applied for this hunt. I mean, we had people from hunting and trapping and education people that helped the Game Commission out with that and are very avid archers. And I know for a fact that there was plenty of people that were very traditional, brought their, you know, compound bows, set their tree stands up, and
right.
they were, but we did have younger hunters, we did have older hunters that came in and used crossbows too. Some people hunted from the ground, some people hunted from tree stands. It seemed like the success rate between those two was actually pretty even. There was people that came in that said, you know, I was hunting in my tree stand for the last 4 days, and on the last day I thought, I keep seeing these deer in this field, so I'm just going to set a bucket here and hide in the corn.
Yeah.
And they harvested a doe. So it happened. I mean, but I would like to think that it's not something that we asked them in our surveys, but I think it was a good mixture of both.
Was there any other findings that you found significant?
We had them rate their hunt on a scale of 1 to 5, and everybody seemed to be really satisfied with the overall experience, whether they harvested a deer or not. On average, though, depending on who you were, what zone you were in, but people on average were seeing anywhere from 5 to 12 to 15 deer a day. So it was just, and not everybody, but
sure.
for the majority of people. So that was really interesting to see. One thing that I'm going to bring it up just because it is an additional change that I think we're going to hit on this year is the fact that people saw coyote frequently here, which we do have coyote, and something that we added last year in addition to the archery hunt was a trapping opportunity as well. Unfortunately, during the trapping opportunity, no coyotes were harvested, but it's something that last year we said deer only, don't touch the coyotes. And this year I think we're going to open it up just for another opportunity to the
sure.
public to have while they're here, and the archery hunter even during our muzzleloader hunt. But many people said that. I was surprised at how many people had seen coyotes nice. During their archery hunt. But I'm just trying to go over. Can you think of anything that you saw?
We talked a little bit about how Middle Creek was formed. You know, essentially we bought or took farms from people, and then we had this large area where people weren't really allowed to go into. Unless you drew a goose blind, which was great. But there were other opportunities that we could do to allow a limited number of people to go in and experience it. Because the way I felt and the way Lauren felt is we want to allow regulated use of that controlled area without it negatively impacting the reason that Middle Creek was formed. So, you know, we're constantly looking at things that we could do, what opportunities are out there for sportsmen and what we can do as a staff, you know, because anytime that you have a limited opportunity, you have staff time and things like that involved with it. But I think as time goes forward, we're going to continue to evolve and try to come up with things that benefit the sportsmen of Pennsylvania, that they can get out there and enjoy Middle Creek, just like our archers and trappers and muzzleloader hunters and goose hunters do.
So even aside from the safety issues of hunting, it's even possible to use hunting in an area that may be designated as environmentally or ecologically sensitive for whatever reason. You can still have hunting in there. The two can coexist.
Sure, they can coexist. It just depends on why it's environmentally sensitive, you know. But yeah, you can... Hunting, if you can allow people in there, you can allow hunters in there. especially if they're in there doing something good, like helping control deer numbers.
Right.
So, you know, someone bird watching and somebody hunting, the only difference is one of them's watching birds, the other one's shooting deer. But their footprint is the same. You know, it's one person going into the area.
And I guess we should say, if you were to have no deer hunting out here, how would that make your job more difficult managing for all wildlife?
I think, as you well know, you want to have a health. We want to have deer here. We don't want to eliminate deer because right. It's a great draw. When you drive down Hopeland Road in the fall, there will be 10 cars parked along the road watching the deer there. It's a very popular place for people to come spotlighting. They show their kids there. They drive through the tour road. They see the deer. We don't want to stop that. We want that to be allowed, but we want to try to keep that deer herd in check. We don't want it to continue to grow, and we can provide opportunities for people to get out, have a quality hunting experience, and still meet those other goals. And that's what we want to be able to do.
So this is a unique program, certainly in Pennsylvania, the bow hunting opportunity offer here at Middle Creek. It had never been done here before or anywhere else in the state. What kind of prompted the idea to do it this way?
I'm fairly new to the position. I've been here almost 3 years. Lauren's been here just over a year. When I took over, my supervisor told me, take a look at Middle Creek, see what you can do to put fresh eyes on it, and you know, try to come up with something different, something new, breathe some different life into it. Lauren started, so we kind of worked together on this, and I'm an avid archer. I love to bow hunt. I do it every opportunity that I get. So, and I've taken part in some controlled hunts in other areas, you know, on corporation lands, and I know the effectiveness that it could have. And just from talking to hunters, I know that people really strive for a quality experience. You know, some people get frustrated with hunting over crowded public lands. So I saw that opportunity, and then I sat down with Lauren, and together we were able to put our heads together, and we worked with the other staff in the region office to come up with a plan that worked for everybody. We wanted to make sure that we preserved the biological uniqueness of Middle Creek, but we wanted to provide that opportunity. I'd like to say that it was completely my idea, but Jerry Bish out at Pymatuning Wildlife Management Area in Crawford County, I went out there to visit with him. And this was an idea he had, but he had not had the opportunity to implement it. So he and I talked about it. So I kind of stole his idea and brought it back to the Southeast. Lauren and I tweaked it, changed it a little bit, and we ran it up through the region, and that's how we implemented it. Now Pymatuning is doing something that is very similar out there, where they're using they're going to open their area instead of having that one day where you're putting everybody in there. And the problem with that is when you have a one-day hunt, if you remember the old, when we had a one-day doe season, it was crazy. You know, what happens is that's the only day you have. So it doesn't matter if it's raining, if it's sleeting, if you have good weather, bad weather, it's your one opportunity. And that's sort of how our hunts were here. It can be a way to harvest deer, but it's not a way to have a quality hunt. And if you want to kill 20 deer, you know, sometimes it's easier to kill 20 deer with less hunting pressure spread out over a longer time period than just throwing everybody in there in that one day. So we kept that muzzleloader hunt because it's very important to the people around here. You know, that it's tradition, and it's ineffective, and we didn't want to do that. But we had that second hunt period that wasn't effective. So we were able to try to tweak that, bring in the archery hunting, and that's sort of how it came about. And like I said, Lauren was great. She grabbed the bull by the horns, took the idea, figured out how to implement it on the ground, and that's where we're at.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say I'll never forget the day that the email came out with the news release from Lauren, because I'm from the area, I'm an avid bow hunter, I've been on Middle Creek's one day muzzleloader hunt in the past. I remember reading through it and I was thinking, man, this is an awesome opportunity. I called up Lauren and I think I grilled her for about an hour. I was like, is this real? Are you really doing that? So that's that's what level of excitement there would be for this opportunity. It's
that good.
And that's what
we want to keep. I mean, that's, like I said, we had 892 applicants last year. I can only imagine what's going to happen this year just with more advertisement about the actual hunt, but that passion that you have to, like, oh my God, Middle Creek, it's sort of been like this mysterious place to people that they could never enter. And now, like Dave said, we're allowing you guys, allowing people to come in to hunt, but still the biological footprint, we're it's in a time that it's not as sensitive. Now, if we were bow hunting right now in a time when there's nesting, breeding birds, the Canada geese, or, you know, they got, have their goslings. So it's not in a time that it's super sensitive. So if you have people that are outdoorsmen, naturalists that also hunt as well, that listen to this podcast, you can know in good faith that we did our research and know that we're not affecting things negatively.
And the thing you have to remember, PJ, too, is we're an agency funded by hunting license dollars. We represent all the Commonwealth citizens. You know, we manage every species and we do a very good job at it. But at our core, you know, hunters help pay for the Pennsylvania Game Commission. There are, you know, they're the backbone of the agency, and we use regulated hunting and trapping, you know, to manage wildlife populations. And this was an opportunity where we could give something to hunters that they didn't have before. And why wouldn't we want to do that? Like Lauren said, they were super appreciative. Everybody loved it. It was just it was great for them. It was great for us. It gave us an opportunity to interact with them. It gave them a chance to see the Game Commission maybe in a little bit different light, that we do care about hunting, and we want to make sure that they have opportunities instead of saying, no, you can't do that. You can do it, but we have to follow these steps. And I think it was just a win for everybody. The hunters who were drawn, like Lauren said, were very appreciative. They're a joy to work with. You know, they followed the rules. One of the concerns we had were, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with this, or what's going to happen? Because you don't know, it's new. So, you know, our WCOs were concerned, our region staff was concerned, I was concerned. We had no problems. I mean, everybody followed the rules perfectly. They called in if they had to recover a deer at night. They let us know that they were going back in there. They signed in, they signed out. It was just a wonderful experience all around.
Lauren, that had to try your nerves a little bit, I imagine, because you would have been just a couple months into the job. Here's this awesome new program, and it's your first one.
I'm glad I'm done with my first year, to be honest. No, it was actually a really good experience for me to come in and just kind of jump right in. It didn't take long at all, and Dave had these ideas, and I thought it was a good idea to, if we went about it the correct way. And like I said, we had the archery hunting opportunity, but we also established the trapping opportunity as well, and we've got new goose blinds in the same time frame, and there was a lot, and we've been doing a lot of renovations to the visitor center here. So if you haven't, actually, just a little shout out for the visitor center, all of our displays have been completely redone within the last 5 years or so. Very interactive, not the old 70s kind of feel anymore. It's kind of been a whirlwind here at Middle Creek, but a lot of positive improvements and additions, such as the archery hunt and the trapping opportunities, have been, we've been fortunate enough to put in place.
So we were talking, one of the unique things about Middle Creek is that it may possibly be used more by non-hunters than hunters, especially during peak migrating seasons. I mean, there's thousands of people out there.
Sure.
How have you gotten any feedback from them about the hunting program?
Sure. So if you are just speaking as a birder now, not as a hunter, but if you are a naturalist in general and you enjoy using the outdoors, you enjoy looking at all types of wildlife, you know that hunting is an important part of management. It's a management tool that you use for the health of not just deer, but for everything that is here at Middle Creek. So if any of our birders, there was a few people that said, you know, we noticed some people in the controlled area, what's going on? It was more curiosity than, and then once we said, oh, we're having a controlled archery hunt to take place, the late archery flintlock hunt, and they were like, oh, what a neat opportunity. But for the most part, there wasn't, you would think that the birders would be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're letting people in there. But it wasn't the case. And mostly because the people that come here are very avid birders. They enjoy coming here, and not just the birders, but recreationists alike. But they understand what our goals are here and why we're using this as a management tool. That being said, too, it's in the controlled area. We're not allowing them in the propagation area where a lot of sensitive species are. And at that time of year, we have a lot of water, migrating waterfowl that's coming through, too. And all those birds, they can see them along the tour road and along the outside at the visitor center without negatively impacting are hunters, and the hunters don't negatively impact their bird watching opportunities or recreation opportunities because they're in two different areas, which kind of makes, that's why Middle Creek is so unique, because you have these different areas. You have the controlled area, the propagation area, the public recreation area, and then you have just the regular game lands. There's four different areas here at Middle Creek, and so they kind of overlap sometimes, but for the most part, you know, the hikers stay in the rec area, the birders will stay in the along the tour road and kind of bordering the propagation area, so they don't really kind of intermingle, but they seem to be totally understanding and, you know, knowing that I think they trust us to manage the deer and all species here correctly, and they know that if that would negatively impact other things here, that we probably wouldn't be doing it. So
I think, David, you had mentioned it. You are the Game Commission. You are funded by hunting license dollars, but your mandate from the state is to manage all wildlife, whether they're hunted or not.
Right, that's correct. And when you look at the amount of impact that we put on there, I just checked here real quick, and I think the area that we had open for hunting was maybe 1,200 acres. So if you put, you know, very seldom would have all 1,600 been on there. So you're looking at maybe one person per 100 acres at a time. So, I mean, that's 12 more people maybe that are normally that are in that area, but that's still a super low impact. I mean, if you think about putting one person in 100 acres, you know, wildlife may notice it, but they may not.
So
we're not going in there like when we do the muzzleloader hunt, you know, we're putting 80 or 100 people in there. So, you know, they're walking through, they're moving deer around there. It's much more intrusive where when you do the archery hunting, it's much more low impact. And I think it's just much more compatible for our uses here for that longer period of time. You know, taking 1 or 2 days and having a controlled muzzleloader hunt, that's not a problem. But you wouldn't want to do that every day. And archery allows us to have that low impact. And they could be in there archery hunting and bird watchers wouldn't even know that they were there.
And like I said, any person that comes here that's birding, recreating, generally understands why we're using that. So we didn't have this overwhelming amount of people coming in, beating down the door saying, I can't believe you're allowing these people in here, because they know Middle Creek has a very strong heritage of hunting. And we allow, and I think it's not as big of a shock because, well, we have our waterfowl hunts here. We had the muzzleloader hunts twice a year, and now we added an archery and a trapping opportunity. But even with a trapping opportunity, same thing. One trapper per zone, you're not making a huge, you know, you're not disturbance in that area. So people either, I should say, they didn't notice, or they just didn't, they saw the point in it and didn't complain at all about it, so.
Well, there was a time, and I was in here once, where you even had an early season muzzleloader hunt. I think that only lasted maybe 2 or 3 years. I got picked for the 1 year for it, and corn was up, and that was really difficult.
Yeah, and like Lauren was saying, you know, when we look at why we're here, we want to try to space everything out so we don't negatively impact anybody. We don't want to negatively impact the bird watchers. We don't want to negatively impact the goose hunters. We don't want to negatively impact the archers now or the trappers. So thankfully, Lauren's incredibly organized, and she can sit down and she can figure out how we can utilize this really nice chunk of property where everybody gets a piece of the pie, but nobody's having too many pieces of it. You know, we're able to share, everybody has a good experience, and that's really what we're about.
And that's something that can translate out of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I mean, that could be nationwide, that principle could play out anywhere. I mean, it is possible to do all things.
Absolutely, and I know we're not in Lancaster County, but over in Lehigh County, there's a property called the Trexler Nature Preserve. And we worked with Wildlands Conservancy to open that to archery hunting. And it's a multi-use facility. It's signed up in one of our public access programs. We've been able to do some habitat work on there, but everybody works together there. You have archery hunters, you have mountain bikers, you have bird watchers, you have runners, you have hikers. And it's a multiple-use facility. And from the get-go, we included archery hunting as one of the things that were used there. And it's been incredibly successful. It's probably been 15 years that that's been open now. And it's just been a really good experience for everybody. You know, I'm sure the mountain bikers would like to have it for themselves. I'm sure the archers would like to have it for themselves. But when you look at available public land that's out there, there's not enough for everybody. So we all have to share. And I think we've proven time and time again that hunters can share with non-consumptive users and without any issues.
So from this, from the first year, now you're going into your second year. Was there anything about last year's hunt that maybe you weren't expecting that surprised you?
We kind of touched base on it a little bit, just the fact that we didn't run into any issues with this at all. One of the main things that we stressed to the hunters when we had them in the orientation was that, and again, we spoke about this previously, that this is just as much an opportunity for you as it is for us to manage the property. But you, if you don't do this correctly, if you abuse the privilege that you've been given, that it could impact this opportunity in the future, that not just you, but everybody that would want to apply for it. And even to the next step, you know, some of the concerns were, well, how do you know who is in each zone? How do you know they're supposed to be there, sort of thing? And yeah, we say, oh, they have to carry their permit, they have to have the placard on their dash in their vehicle. But in addition to that, people paid attention to who was in their zone. And even one of the questions on our survey was, would you be okay sharing your contact information with other folks in their zone? Still undecided about that, because it was about 50-50. So it might be a, if you're comfortable, go ahead sort of thing. Yeah. But they sort of were our eyes on the ground. Do you notice anything going on that you shouldn't notice? If you're coming out at dusk and somebody else is going in and they don't have a placard in their vehicle, well, and they had our contact numbers, so they sort of became our eyes on the ground to help make sure that this stayed a quality hunt and that people, even if they weren't picked for the opportunity, didn't abuse the situation either. So that was just, I think, to be honest with you, first year we've ran into a lot of different things here or there that didn't go exactly as planned, but for the most part, and knock on wood, that this went very, very smoothly. I mean, and part of the process too is that people, when they come in to hunt, they have to check in and check out. And this is all, we'll go over all this at the orientation meeting, just so we know when I come home for the evening, are people still out hunting? Or is it the next morning, you know, just did something happen to a hunter? They have contact numbers just in case it's really late at night and they're really having trouble finding this deer, or they're still in there because they can't pull the deer out, whatever the case might be. We give them our contact information so in case there's emergency, they can contact us. But we just didn't have a single bad opportunity. And even everybody checked in and checked out religiously and followed the rules. And it just was really amazing because they appreciated the opportunity and they wanted to see it continue.
That's an interesting point, because if it had gone the other way and you just had all kinds of problems, you probably wouldn't be as willing to do it again.
Probably not. Or we might have downsized it, or, you know, tried to pick our brains to see what else we could do. We're pretty resilient. Dave and I think are pretty resilient. So we're trying to, you know, continue to think of more opportunities to get people here, but we probably would have tried to find another way to get people in. But yeah, and Dave, maybe you have another thing that shocked you, but
I think, you know, two things. One, and I believe Lauren and I are both this way. We don't have negative attitudes, and we don't have negative attitudes toward hunters. We don't have them towards people in general. You know, you try to see the good in everybody, and you give them the opportunity to prove that they don't deserve that. And I really felt that, you know, from my experience of spending time with hunters, the vast majority of them are great stewards of wildlife. They want to do the right thing, you know. And one of the things that I've told people in the past, when you're trying to open up a property that had never been hunted before, I guarantee you it's being hunted, but it's being hunted by people who are trespassing, who are sneaking in there, who are not supposed to be there, who are not ethical, who are not doing the right thing. If you allow people to be in there, they will take an ownership and they will be good stewards of that land. And even if they're only in there for a week, they know that they have a privilege. And if they catch somebody who's in there essentially stealing that privilege, they'll do the right thing. They'll call, they'll turn them in. And in turn, you know, they may be turning in game law violations. They'll be turning in people who are trespassing. So if you can allow controlled hunting on a piece of property, you can actually make sure that it's being done properly and to the landowner's wishes. And I always say that that's one of the best things about hunters. You know, they will take ownership, they will watch over it, and they will make sure that your wishes are being carried out. And I believe that about hunters in general. I think mostly that they're good people, that they care, and they try to do the right thing. And at least this first year, that proved to be right. And I breathed a big, big sigh of relief at the end of the archery season when it went well. And I'm excited that we're able to add essentially 3 more weeks of hunting time for the people who are selected this year because it did go well. And we'll give the same speech this year. We'll tell them, you know, last year people had 1 week, it went great. People were respectful, they followed the rules. As long as you continue to do that, we can continue to try to maximize your opportunities. Once we start having problems, we're going to have to draw back. So we put it on them. You know, we'll do everything we can, but this is a partnership, and we need our hunters to hold up their end as well.
Say someone gets lucky out there and gets picked. Do you have any tips for them if they get drawn?
So now that it's a 2-week hunt, patience, obviously, you know, make sure you're taking good shots. I'm not just saying that because I'm the manager of the hunt, but you have 2 weeks to take a good ethical shot. So make sure you kind of think about that before you think you see, oh, it's the only deer I'm going to see. I promise you will see more than one deer here while you're hunting. The other thing too is, we kind of talked about it a little bit before we started this, was to hunt the edges, not necessarily, you know, you're in zone one, which is 92 acres of woods. You're going to go deep in those acres of woods. It seems like these deer, because they're so unpressured, that they really like to utilize the edges of the woods and also like to use the fields to feed on. So my suggestion is to don't discount hunting the edges, because that's where the deer are going to be going to. But also look for those pinch points in between the zones too, because they're going to be utilizing them to move between zones. You might be restricted to a zone, but obviously these deer are not. And also don't discount the cornfields, because we had 2 or 3 hunters last year, I believe, that harvested deer just sitting on a bucket in a cornfield. And it was people who were hunting in a stand the whole week, you know, a good portion of the week, and then they decided, oh, I'm going to try something different, and it ended up working out for them. Now, whether it was a coincidence or not, I think, you know, it just, they realized after watching for a few days, oh, wow, look how those deer are just moving along the edge of the cornfield and the grass field. Maybe I should just sit there. And that's where they went.
So just to recap, people should look for the application period to begin sometime end of July.
Mid-July. Yep.
Mid-July.
And then they can apply anytime in July, and we are going to be, these dates are rough here, but the hunts will actually start at the end of September and run through November 11th, which is the end of the archery season. So they can apply from mid-July until September 1st. So they have that amount of time to send it, get that postcard from the post office. And all of this, all the details on how to do that will, like I said, will be listed on our news release that you can pick up at the visitor center, our regional office, or you can actually find it online. If you go to the Game Commission website and in the search bar type in Middle Creek, it'll be one of the first links that you can click on there.
And the one thing that they want to make sure that they have on there is their 5B license, because they do need to be licensed to hunt antlerless deer. So once the antlerless drawing takes place, even if you don't have that license in hand, you can go on our website. It'll tell you that your license has been awarded, and you can then put the number down on your application. So you don't have to worry about physically having that license in your hand. You can check it online. You can write down, you know, the number of your antlerless tag, and then you can apply. So you don't have to worry about stressing out waiting, you know, for your license to come.
That's a good point to mention, because here in Pennsylvania, the antlerless application is by lottery, and that starts July 10th.
Right.
So it's very possible that they don't have their tag by this time. But as you said, you can go online and get your number anyway.
And it's not a first come, first serve thing. If they apply in August, if they apply, you know, a week within September 1st, we won't do the drawing until after September 1st. This year, let's see, it's going to be on Wednesday, September 6th. Again, all this information will be included in that news release that comes out. So they have until that September 1st deadline to apply. So even if they don't have their 5B license right at July, when the news release comes out, it's okay. You can either wait to see if you get it to apply, or like Dave said, go online and get it. So, but anytime during that month and a half time period, they can apply. And so it's not a first come, first serve thing.
And the Game Commission, you can go online and type in Pennsylvania Game Commission, or the website address is pgc.pa.gov, G-O-V. So Lauren and Dave, we certainly appreciate your time today.
Thank you, PJ. It was nice talking with you here.
Yes, and hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, everybody, for listening today. We hope you learned a lot from this podcast. If you want to hear more Lancaster Archery podcasts, you can check the iTunes store or wherever you get your podcasts from. We will also have show notes from this podcast on the blog on our website, which is lancasterarchery.com.